Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, North State. This is Rich Novelli, president of Wellgate Sports Club, and you're listening to Wellgate Wellness here on this Saturday morning. We have been building a library, if you will, of topics that we've talked about over the last few months, hopefully helping the community of Reading and the surrounding county to really improve the quality of their life, and we are hopefully keeping that tradition going here today. We are very privileged to have with us Dr. Jeremy Austin, who is going to speak to us today about the state of primary medical care here in the North State and really around the country, and what patients can do to improve the quality of care that they receive. Dr. Austin is in family medicine. He's a family medicine medical specialist who attended college and medical school in Charleston, South Carolina. He did his family medicine residency here in Reading at Mercy Hospital from 1999 to 2002. And now he's spending most of his time between the Veterans Administration in the Urgent Care
That's correct.
Center. And two ERs, both in Fall River Mills and soon in Lone Pine. So good morning, Dr. Austin.
Good morning, Mr. Novelli. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure. And, you know, as I mentioned, we want to talk today about the state of primary medical care here in the North State and really break down the segments over this next hour, basically in, you know, how you can help your doctor is topic number one, and also, you know, how doctors think here. So really, as the state of medical care is evolving and changing, what with Obamacare and a lot of what we're going to talk about today and maybe the lack of primary care physicians that are out there, Dr. Austin is going to help us kind of weave our way through the system and learn how we can do a better job of receiving the kind of quality care that we all deserve. So, Jeremy, thanks for being with us. I appreciate you taking the time today, and we've got a lot of ground to cover. So let's get right into this and start off with, I've talked to a lot of physicians who believe there is a growing shortage of primary care providers in this country. First of all, do you agree with that? And secondly, if you do, why is that?
I do agree that we need a lot more doctors of all specialities, but in particular, primary care is a big need in the United States. And part of the reason why I can come to that conclusion is that there's been several studies that have been done looking at our healthcare system in the United States, publications that have been released both by the American Academy of Family Physicians, of which I'm a member, American Medical Association, and several other studies that have looked at our current primary care use in the United States. And when I discuss primary care, I'm talking about general pediatricians, general internal medicine practitioners, as well as family medicine practitioners, and the visits that patients use to access primary care from those docs. Looking at a couple studies recently, both again from the American Academy of Family Physicians as well as the Association of American Medical Schools, it looks like, especially over the next 10 years, we currently are in multiple thousands of primary care physicians that we are short currently, and that as we look over the next 10 years, that number is going to grow. Some numbers, and I promise not to throw out too many over this broadcast, but currently we have about 209,000 primary care physicians throughout the United States seeing patients. And they're projecting in these studies that we're going to need about 261,000 physicians by 2025. So again, over the next 10 years, we're looking about 52,000 more physicians that we may need. I've looked at another study that said, in particular of primary care physicians, again, pediatricians, internal medicine doctors, and family physicians, we estimate that we're going to need an additional 12,500 to 31,100 primary care physicians to see the patients who need care.
Now, is that because the population is growing, population is aging? What are the reasons that they are given for the need for additional primary care physicians?
All the above and more. Yes, our population in the United States is aging. A lot of the baby boomers who are pushing through their 50s and getting into the 60s and 70s, as we age, we naturally need more healthcare services. Our population in the United States is also growing, so there's literally more patients that need access to care. And another significant event that happened over the past couple of years was the passage of the American Affordable Care Act, which allowed millions, and I don't know what the final number will finally fall out to be, but many more people now have insurance coverage for which they have an ability to access primary care, whereas they may not have had that before.
That's interesting. Now, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but for the North State, particularly in Shasta County, is that shortage of primary care physicians larger per capita? Is it about the same? Do we have any, different demographics that would exacerbate that number for us?
I don't have statistics that I could share with you, and those statistics may be out there for which I haven't, seen that particular study or that particular assessment. For the North State, and I'll just speak from some of my direct observations, we may have a little bit more difficulty compared to other geographic regions of the country because, A, we don't have a medical school too close to Redding, California, and in our county, to where we have a direct lifeline to the medical students that are coming up through this process. What we do have in Redding is two family medicine residency programs, and that gives us some good access to resident doctors who are getting trained to become primary care providers. And a lot of those doctors do decide to stay in our area. There are other factors in Northern California that may work a little bit against us as well, particularly since there is a fairly well-known shortage of primary care providers. Many other areas of the country are vying for those same medical school and residency graduates, and typically through monetary offering, through salaries and compensation packages, are able to draw those same doctors away from California.
So it becomes a supply and demand issue, at least in the short term.
Short term, and what we're looking at long term. Certainly policy changes within California affect a lot of physicians' decisions, whether they're going to stay in California or whether they're going to come to California, or if they're going to go to other states. I will kind of select out Texas and Idaho as some of those states that oftentimes can offer a lower cost of living, attractive compensation packages, and where physicians may want to go to practice. And certainly those two states are not the only examples where a lot of doctors have left California and gone elsewhere to practice where they can have a better lifestyle, based on what's being offered to them.
Sure. So I'm one of the lucky ones that has a primary care provider. Let's talk a little bit about what I can do as a patient to help my doctor doctor me.
I believe going into that primary care visit, number one, do your homework. There's a lot of factors that kind of drive how a physician thinks when they are walking into that examination room to see their next patient of the day. And so one of the messages that I'd like to drive home to our listening audience is have the one or two, maybe three healthcare concerns that you have ready for that physician or nurse practitioner or physician assistant. Have that issue ready so that in that time that you have in the room with your doctor or, again, nurse practitioner or physician assistant, make sure you get that out early. Get it out well. Have a good concise questions or a good description of what is going on with you so that you have your provider's focus on that issue, again, during those minutes that you're with your provider in the room.
Interesting. You quoted me some statistics here that I found fascinating, that the average doc works about 46 hours a week and sees an average of about 23 patients a day. That doesn't include hospital time or other commitments that they've got, correct?
That is correct for most physicians. A lot of the model, for example, of family medicine was where a doctor was going to see their patients in the office. Typically, they were going to round on their patients in the hospital before they had office hours, and then with some attention divided between hospitals and their primary care office, and then back several years ago, it was more common for physicians to deliver babies and perform more obstetric type of care. There are still physicians, even some in Reading, who do manage to round in hospitals, see patients in their primary care offices, deliver babies from their patients. But that the number of physicians who are performing all of those tasks are decreasing with the onset and popularity of hospitalists, who again who will primarily take care of patients in the hospital, and then more of our pregnant patients are getting their care from specialist obstetricians who will take care of that pregnant woman, you know, during the pregnancy and through the delivery of that child.
Interesting. So we're looking at the average patient visit garnering maybe 4.5 minutes of a doctor's time. We're talking FaceTime, right?
Correct.
And so obviously that's not a lot of time for either physician or for the patient to get. What are some of the factors that have narrowed that amount of time that I actually get to sit and talk to my doctor?
A lot of it is driven by the volume that a physician needs to see in a day. Sometimes that decision is an internal decision by a doctor. Hey, I need to keep moving, see the next patient that's waiting for me. Speaking to myself personally, I'm very aware that patients don't like to wait in waiting rooms for an hour or two to finally see their doctor for a scheduled appointment. But a lot of times that pressure to keep moving for a medical provider is external. You know, there's bills to pay, and there's managers who have expectations of their medical providers. You need to see a certain number of patients per day or per hour to keep the lights on and keep the staff paid and to generate the income that's needed to pay the bills.
Interesting. There seems to be a lot of administrative and other business factors now that play into even allowing a primary care physician to keep the doors open, which I would imagine is one factor in the diminishing number of primary care physicians because it's become more business and less patient-centric. Would that be a fair statement?
I believe that'd be a fair statement. I'll be the first to say for myself personally, and maybe I'll make a generalization about doctors. Doctors are very knowledgeable about medicine, but when it comes to matters of business or money, they are no brighter than anyone else. And so certainly we get a lot of feedback from our managers, or we could look at the spreadsheets of our respective businesses, our respective offices, and realize in order to keep the staff paid and keep the lights on, you know, we're going to need to generate a certain amount of revenue to cover the expenses and keep everybody employed.
So with the change in the insurance landscape such as it is, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act, do you see that getting helping physicians? Do you see that getting worse?
One thing that the Affordable Care Act has done, it has provided many more patients with access to primary care physicians. However, in the landscape of the United States, the number of physicians didn't mystically increase with the passage of that act. So the number of primary care doctors out there seeing patients hasn't changed. And so that puts a lot more patients out there that are seeking care, and unfortunately not a lot more of us providers who have that ability to receive that increased population. So there probably, and there is, more impetus for us as providers to see more patients based on the demand.
Okay. Well, great. Well, so we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue with this interesting conversation, a lot of other topics to touch on. You are listening to Wellgate Wellness. This is Rich Novelli, and we'll be back after a few messages.
Wellgate Sports Club has dedicated themselves to creating an environment that supports your personal goals, whatever they may be. That's because Wellgate Sports Club is more than just a gym. Wellgate is Reading's first premier sports club with the staff, programs, and 23,000 square foot facility designed to give you an exceptional experience every day. Now it's never been easier to take advantage of incredible amenities, including Reading's only indoor saltwater pool, outdoor jacuzzi, sauna, luxury towel service, and over 130 exercise classes designed from beginners to experts. For a limited time, you can become a member of Wellgate Sports Club with no enrollment fee. That's a $99 value. In addition, Wellgate Sports Club will provide you with 3 personal training sessions and a nutrition consultation absolutely free. That's another $225 value. There's never been a better time or a better place to get started. Call 768-1205 today for your personal tour. Or stop by 1740 Eureka Way and don't forget to visit online at WellgateSportsClub.com. Wellgate Sports Club, where you'll experience exceptional every day.
How about some traditional Mexican food for Second Tuesday dinner in March, Abby?
I love authentic Mexican food. We must be going to Mazatlan Grill.
That's right. With their welcoming, friendly staff and fiesta-like atmosphere, you can start with tableside guacamole made to your liking and sizzling fajitas and so much more to choose from.
Please join us on Tuesday, March 8th at Mazatlan Grill as they graciously donate a portion of the proceeds to Haven Humane Society to help them care for the stray, abused, and unwanted animals as they look to place them in loving homes.
It's all about good food, good friends, and helping the animals.
Hi, I'm Cody Titus with Properties by Merit. Whether you're buying or selling a home, you can count on me to get the best results. Not only do I represent both residential and land, but I also specialize in rural properties and ranches. At Properties by Merit, we help your real estate dreams become a reality. Call or text me today, Cody Titus, at 209-0721.
Properties by Merit is California Corporation licensed by the California Bureau of Real Estate. California BRE license number 019-45816.
In the 40s, Reading Cab and Yellow Cab merged, and Reading Yellow Cab was born. A lot has changed since then. The town has more than tripled in size, and so have they. Through the decades, they've served Reading with generations of trustworthy drivers, family men and women, treating their customers with the respect and professionalism they'd expect for their own families. When you need to get to or from the airport or the train station, perhaps, Reading Yellow Cab is there for you. When you need a safe ride home, need to do some shopping, or want someone to shop for you, call Reading Yellow Cab at 222-1234.
Dandelion. Unique Gifts and Clothing is the hot spot in Reading for all things fashion. Dandelion carries an amazing selection of Brighton jewelry, all the latest clothing lines, and every woman's favorite secret weapon, Spanx. Shop wonderful gifts in all price ranges and receive the best service in town. Check out Dandelion at 1322 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Reading. Dandelion.
The goodies, the gadgets, the gizmos. Every week, Boomer Tech Radio talks about the innovations and the developments in technology that are impacting your life. Hi, it's Bob Belongi, and for the past 6 years, Brenda and I have brought you the tech news you can really use. Sponsored by Advanced Automotive of Reading, safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. It's analog living in a digital world on Boomer Tech Radio, heard noon to two Saturdays or streaming anytime on KCNR 1460.
This is Carl and Linda Bott. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 1460, your favorite talk radio station. On Monday, we welcome Enjoy the Magazine, The Store, The Empire. Find out what's going on in Northern California this month via Enjoy the Magazine and much more. What's happening with politics, local, regional, and national. All here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Miss a day, miss a lot.
All right, welcome back, North State. We are talking with Dr. Jeremy Austin, who has been kind enough to spend the Saturday morning with us and talk about the state of primary care here in the North State and really in the country. And we left off by talking a little bit about kind of what's driving this shortage, but and I wanted to expand on that. I know you had a couple other points you wanted to make, Jeremy, with, you know, why aren't there more docs out there? Why aren't people heading into this field? Maybe you can elaborate for us a little on that.
I apologize to our listening audience that I'll probably reflect on myself a bit personally as well as try to take a bigger picture view of this. For myself personally, there weren't any other physicians in my family, but there were several nurses in my family, most significantly my mother. And so at an early age, at 5 years old, she handed me that anatomy coloring book and started fostering that interest in the human body and in medicine in general. And then my mother, as a nurse, would oftentimes take me on her patient rounds. She was a hospice nurse in Siskiyou County, and I had opportunity to see several patients at a young age. And so that became sort of a natural culture for me that planted that seed early to make me interested in people, make me interested in medicine, and implanted again that interest. Part of the message is if you have kids out there or if you are interested in medicine yourself, certainly foster that interest, knowing that we have a great and growing need for medical care in the United States. Another reason, kind of a big picture reason why young people going from high school to college or considering what they're doing in college may choose other fields as opposed to medicine is that the road to become a medical practitioner is a long one.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was 4 years of college, which I was blessed to be able to finish college in 4 years. Then I was also blessed to be able to go directly from college to medical school, which is yet another 4 years. And then an additional blessing to be able to go from medical school right into residency, which was 3 years. So to become a family medicine specialist, it was essentially 11 years of education and training to finally get to that point to where I'm able to independently treat these primary care patients.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was in college, there was a study released that talked about the money involved and the net worth of an individual choosing one career versus another. In the comparison that was made was looking at an engineer who's going to get out of college in 4 or 5 years and then immediately start working at whatever salary that they were going to make right out of college. Looking at prospective doctors after they got out of college in 4 or 5 years, then they would go right into medical school and immediately start accruing debt.
Mm-hmm.
For myself personally, it was fortunate that I attended an in-state medical school for where my tuition was about half of what out-of-state students had to pay to go to my particular medical school. The average debt that a doctor would have coming out of my medical school was about $150,000, and I was fortunate that I only was in debt about $120,000. I believe the average debt now is closer to about $180,000 for graduates of medical schools and those people carrying that debt through residency. After medical school, while engineers, for example, are continuing to make their salary and getting their career advancements, residents don't make a tremendous amount of money. And so they're probably not going to make much headway against that medical school debt. And so for 3 or 4 or 5 or sometimes more years of specialty training, they are getting by,
mm-hmm.
With their residency salaries. It's finally after someone completes residency, gets their license to practice as a specialist, where the expectation of a good salary really comes to bear. In the same study, when we were looking at engineers versus doctors, and again, I'm talking about a study that was released 20 years ago, an engineer getting right out of college improves their net worth, right out of college with their salary. A doctor, having completed college, medical school, residency, starts making a good salary after residency, will catch up to a engineer in terms of net worth at age 52.
Oh, geez.
So an economist looking at advising college students what career to go into will oftentimes advise a college student, well, if you're thinking about doing this just for money, Don't do medicine for money because you'll have a lot of delayed gratification.
It's no wonder doctors are grumpy, man. That you know, if you're not going to catch up on your debt until age 52, and you know, that's a little bit of a weight on one's shoulders. Now, is it that primary care is a field or a specialty that's being, you know, because of a lot of the things you talked about in terms of setting up an office and all this, is that what's driving doctors away? Is there a shortage overall in other specialties?
There are shortages in other specialties. So with regards to that economic study looking at engineers versus doctors, there are a lot of pathways that people are going to be more financially enriched by choosing other fields as opposed to medicine. Certainly in medical school, there's another crossroad that happens to students such as myself where we have to decide what kind of doctor are we going to be, what kind of practice we're going to participate in when we're finally done with the fairly long process. And as I was going through medical school, the subjects that I did best, the rotations for which I did best, were surgery and psychiatry. Two fields that are about as opposite from each other as possible.
Right.
I'm very interested in doing procedures and therefore love the surgery end of things. Psychiatry, of course, then there's very little physical procedures that a doctor is going to do. So for me, being able to incorporate the things that I love doing best, family medicine represented both my interest in surgery, my interest in psychiatry, and the broad spectrum of medicine for which I could do the things that I love to do and, of course, have the opportunities to treat as many patients as I could.
So the primary care physician really sounds like, not just using a sports analogy, like a utility player. I mean, they have to wear a lot of hats. And clearly, you've got to have, I guess, the right frame of mind, the right personality, character to be able to do that. But in today's, you know, in today's world of, you know, primary care, it doesn't sound like there's any great advantages right now that are being tossed their way to be able to do all those things in a way that really connects with patients. It sounds to me like it's becoming more and more and more of this, you know, treadmill, if you will, where they get on every morning, see their 23, 25 patients a day, and, you know, and hopefully can make a difference with the patients they do have. But because of the patient load that they're required, you don't really get a chance to connect. So as a patient, let's talk a little bit about what I can do to use that 4.5 minutes of FaceTime with the doctor. I'm not talking about with the PA. I'm not talking about with the nurse or the administrative staff. I'm talking, I get that 4.5 minutes with my doc. And how best can I get my point across? What are some of the things that I'm looking for when I'm talking to my doctor to make sure that we're staying as connected as we possibly can during that time?
As the basis of a doctor's education and training, we are taught, and what we practice is a frame of approaching a problem that's fairly set. So as we walk into a patient's room, to answer your question, it's best to put your problem out. The one problem in particular that you want your physician, your primary care provider, to address early. Since what we as physicians want to do is help you, the patient, overcome, you know, that illness that is making you sick, overcome the pain that is keeping you from having the quality of life that you want. And we absolutely want to address what is that one issue in particular that will help you the most. Occasionally, and we may have time to address a second or third issue, but especially if we are working in a busy practice situation where we may only have a limited amount of time, a 15-minute time slot, for which we may only have 4.5 minutes of face-to-face time with our patient, we as doctors certainly want to use that time very effectively to get a good sense of why did you want to come see me today. So answering your question a little further, my message for our listening audience is, yes, do your homework. Figure it out what it is, what is that one thing, maybe two things, that you most want to have addressed during that particular patient visit with your doctor. And get it out there early, because the way a physician's mind often works, I don't mean to limit anybody else in my field by explaining my limitations, but typically I'm looking for what's called the chief complaint. What is that burning issue? What is the main problem that we can tackle on this particular visit? And then I'm going to be going into what's called a history of present illness. I'm going to be asking questions. Certainly, in my practice and my habits, I try to just listen for a while. Now, I've been reading a book that I read several years ago and I kind of dip back into. It's called How Doctors Think. It's, the author is Jerome Groopman, an MD, and this book was published in 2007. And what Dr. Groopman refers to is that a doctor usually is going to interrupt their patients within about 18 seconds. Because as the wheels are turning in a doctor's mind, they'll take some initial information and start to churn out that intellectual process for which they may come to a solution to the problem that the patient's bringing to us.
So one of your points sounds to me like, I don't want to hear the history of what got you to this chief complaint, per se. I want to know what your concern is. I don't want to know that it started when I went to visit my Aunt Edna, who had, you know, gout, and we sat and talked for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden I had this thing kind of start happening. You want to really get to what your point is.
Yes and no. I mean, we definitely want to get to that point fairly quickly. However, past medical history, the history of whatever this pain or this illness that's bothering you is important, because typically over the course of that time where the patient and then the doctor are talking, there's going to be, how long has this been going on?
Right.
How did this start?
Right.
And that oftentimes will give clues to the medical provider, okay, is this one diagnosis versus is this another? Referring back to this book by Dr. Groopman, there's a quote by well-known physician. His name is William Osler. And that quote says essentially that the patient will tell us the diagnosis. And out of my training and from some of the education that I received from some of the family medicine mentors I've had over the years, is about 80% of the time what you, the patient, tells us gives us the diagnosis. Another 10 to 15% of the time, we, the physicians, are going to get to a diagnosis by physical examination. Maybe another 2.5% of the time or so, we're going to get to a diagnosis by using labs or x-rays or some of the other technologies that are available to us to help analyze and investigate what the health concern is. And then, honestly, maybe 1 out of 40 times, 2.5% of the time, we may never get to that one diagnosis that explains what the, you know, what that pain or what that illness may actually be.
Interesting. This is fascinating to me, because I know as a patient, being on the other side or being on the sitting on the exam table there, that we want to connect with our doctor. We know he has a limited amount of time. But you have some specific timetables within that 4.5 minutes where you get a chance as a patient, you recommend to get your chief concern out, give the doctor the information he needs, but then not to continue to ping away at that doctor because they have now gone into a different mode. And when we get back, we'll finish that topic up, and then we'll get into a couple other areas that we want to cover, including those of us that don't have a primary care physician and what our options are. So you're listening to Wellgate Wellness. We're having a fascinating discussion with Dr. Jeremy Austin. We will return after a few messages. Stay with us.
Wellgate Sports Club has dedicated themselves to creating an environment that supports your personal goals, whatever they may be. That's because Wellgate Sports Club is more than just a gym. Wellgate is Reading's first premier sports club with a staff, programs, and 23,000 square foot facility designed to give you an exceptional experience every day. Now it's never been easier to take advantage of incredible amenities, including Redding's only indoor saltwater pool, outdoor jacuzzi, sauna, luxury towel service, and over 130 exercise classes designed from beginners to experts. For a limited time, you can become a member of Wellgate Sports Club with no enrollment fee. That's a $99 value. In addition, Wellgate Sports Club will provide you with 3 personal training sessions and a nutrition consultation absolutely free. That's another $225 value. There's never been a better time or a better place to get started. Call 768-1205 today for your personal tour. Or stop by 1740 Eureka Way and don't forget to visit online at WellgateSportsClub.com. Wellgate Sports Club, where you'll experience exceptional every day.
The Great Bear Show, Dakota Freedom Gold Rush fame, Tough Shed's Ultimate Man Cave, 220-foot Super Zip Line, Laser Tag, Sea Breacher, Detonators, Splash Dogs, Kids Trout Fishing Pond, Rock Climbing Wall, Bass Fin Fishing Demonstrations, all this and more as Crown Motors presents the premier event sport enthusiasts look forward to every year, the 30th Annual NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show, today through Sunday at the Fairgrounds in Anderson, all new with acres of fun and entertainment for the whole family, featuring the latest in sport and recreation accessories, displays, demonstrations, and once-a-year-only show prices on boats, campers, trailers, guides, resorts, marinas, personal watercraft, fishing tackle, guns, auto accessories, wildlife art, camping and RV accessories, hundreds of exhibits, exclusive show prices, backcountry horsemen. Sign up to win a Gold Quest adventure with Dakota Fred or a Columbia River fishing trip. There's something for every member of the family today through Sunday. The annual NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show at the Shasta District Fairgrounds. Sponsored in part by Tri-Counties Bank, Coors Light, Action News Now, and this radio station.
What do you get when you add Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin to an amazing lineup of guests on KCNR 1460 AM?
You get We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Join us anytime online at wethepeopleradio.us.
We the People Radio goes beyond the mainstream soundbites to bring you the entire story on politics, veterans affairs, land use, and private property rights. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us, where we've always got environmental craziness, Agenda 21, Common Core, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
It's the most fun you can have while your blood pressure's going through the roof.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. And we welcome your suggestions for future topics and guests at wethepeopleradio.us. We the People, now on Sundays from noon till 2 on AM 1460 KCNR.
The degree to which we enjoy good health, vitality, and freedom from pain and suffering is directly related to the level of responsibility we're willing to assume for our bodies and our lives. Hi, I'm Nancy Sutton Pierce, host of the Conscious Living Show every Saturday, KCNR1460.com. My show is about helping you uncover your authentic self, discussing health, laughter, love, truth, sex, and so much more. We awaken to who we really are and why we're here, then life improves. Bon Jovi says, I'm going to live while I'm alive. Are you? Tune in every Saturday, 11 to noon, KCNR 1460, streaming live, KCNR1460.com. My website, ConsciousLivingYoga.com, will give you more information. The Conscious Living Show is proudly sponsored by Orchard Nutrition Center, Gorilla Bites, and Fields Jewelers.
So thanks for sticking with us here on a Saturday morning. We are back with Dr. Jeremy Austin, and we are talking about primary care here in the North State. Just to finish up, Jeremy, on this last topic before break, we were talking about this 4.5 minutes and really kind of crawling inside the doctor's head for a little bit. And so we've got you on the couch right now, and we're asking, as a physician, what are you thinking about as we're going through this 4.5 minutes of FaceTime? And we've talked about how important it is for us as patients to come prepared, to give our primary concern, that chief concern that we have, as you said, be succinct and direct. Let the doctor ask the questions that he or she might have with regard to your condition. And as you said, 80% of diagnosis is going to come from that conversation, it sounds like, which is fascinating to me. I didn't even know that. I thought everybody had to stick a, you know, something down my throat or give me a shot or do something to get there. But that's fascinating to me, and that I guess speaks to the education and the experience that we're so privileged to have in this country with some of the greatest doctors in the world. But at some point in that 4.5 minutes, you want to shut up, right? As a patient, and because the doctor goes into this different mode. Explain that to us.
Absolutely. Most of what patients bring to us are probably pretty similar to something that we have seen before, or very likely something that we have read in a textbook. And especially as a physician or other medical practitioners accumulate experience, most diagnoses, the common diagnoses, are common. One of those statements is that if it looks like a horse and it sounds like a horse and it runs like a horse, it's probably a horse. So in that, whether it's 18 seconds before a physician interrupts their patient, or 30 seconds, or first 60 seconds, getting the straight scoop from their patient helps the doctor tremendously. So that by getting your signs and symptoms, in particular the symptoms that you're experiencing, most of the time that is going to open our eyes, open our mind to the possibility of multiple diagnoses. Then what's going through our mind is, okay, how can I limit the possibilities? Number one, how can I rule out the things that are truly dangerous, the things that can truly harm a person, kill a person? How do I know for sure that what you're describing to me may not be particularly dangerous today or this week or this month? How am I able to further refine the information you're giving to me to come to a limited number of diagnoses and something that I may be able to actually help you with some of the tools I have in my armamentarium? So usually after 30 seconds or 60 seconds, that's where the questions are going to come to the patient, saying, well, how did this start? How long has it been going on? Where in your body or your mind is this affecting you? How badly does it hurt, for example? Have you been around anybody else that's been experiencing this, especially if we were talking about infectious disease? Is there anybody else in your family that is experiencing similar symptoms? There's a lot of bits of history that can become relevant when it comes to an illness, when it comes to the various things that we experience as people, foreign travel. It's occasionally difficult for a patient to understand what is trickling through the doctor's mind and how those pieces of information become relevant when we ask questions about foreign travel, about the water source, or about your particular habits as a person. One of the things that I would very much encourage every patient is be brutally honest. I've been told in the past that you should never lie to your accountant, to your priest, or to your lawyer. I'd probably like to add doctor to that list too, because that's where having that moment with our patient in the room and we're getting information from you, the patient, if we're given good information, it's much more likely we're going to make a good decision. But if a patient is reticent to offer the information that we're asking or that we're not asking, or if we ask a question particularly about habits, for example, alcohol, if somebody tells us that they don't drink much but they're actually drinking much more, then that very much can affect a patient's health and may alter the way that we approach how we can help you, the patient. And so there will be, typically during that course of the interview, fairly direct questions that a doctor will ask to help us figure out how we can best help you, the patient. Oftentimes those questions may be uncomfortable questions relating to drinking, to smoking, to illicit substance use, sometimes to sexual habits. And then other questions that may not be as uncomfortable to address directly, but all may have a part in determining what happened to you, the patient, and how we, the physicians, can get to an idea of how best to help you with that issue.
Interesting. At the end of this visit, before the doctor leaves the room, his or her mind starts to go into another mode when we're talking about things like prescriptions and what have you. So at what point are there signals that the doctor's giving off? Is it, you know, working on his iPad, inputting information, or where do you, I as a patient, say, okay, enough stuff. He's in a different mode.
You know, for me, I do like to have good eye contact with my patient, and I just don't have that good of an ability to turn my focus away from talking directly to a patient and receiving answers to where I can multitask. I, for one, am just not that good at multitasking. So after I've done this interview with a patient that may last 1 or 2 or 3 minutes, then after I've performed a physical examination for where I've looked at the vital signs and then have used my stethoscope or looked in ears or eyes or nose or mouth or throat or done whatever a particular physical examination is appropriate to whatever complaint the patient has brought to me, after that process of performing a physical examination, then I will find myself slipping into decision mode. And after I've completed physical examination, that's usually when I've turned my attention to a prescription form or a lab request form, an x-ray request form, some other means of investigating that patient's problem or starting to work on a solution. At that point, if a patient is talking to me, for example, if I'm filling out a prescription that needs to be filled out in a particular way and they're talking to me about their pets, oftentimes if I divide my attention and they're talking to me about their dog Rover, and then I look back down on my prescription, all of a sudden I'm trying to prescribe 3 Rovers a day.
Right.
So, you know, at that point, it's typically best for me, and I think true of a lot of medical practitioners, that they need to work on all that extra paperwork, all that extra computer work that is going to advance your medical care.
So that's fascinating to me. I know that we could go on and on about this particular part of the topic, but hopefully our listeners have gleaned some useful information when the next time they go to the doctor. But moving on to this kind of next phase here, there clearly is frustrations by a lot of patients with the lack of face time that we get, and we've learned from you, doctor, that a lot of that is a component of the business of medicine nowadays, and how that has become more and more bogged down by paperwork and seeing more patients and lack of primary care physicians, and it's really becoming a demanding field. And as what I've noticed, and we're reading a lot now in the literature about this evolution of primary care. And, you know, if I don't have a primary care provider, which a lot of people here in the North State do not have.
Correct.
What are our options? You know, where do we go, and how do those differ from a typical doctor visit?
It is my opinion that probably the best medical care is the old adage of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's where your pediatrician or family medicine or internal medicine doctor can foresee and circumvent a lot of problems before they become problems. Certainly with a lack of primary care access in our area and the country as a whole, then more patients practically find themselves into urgent care centers or into emergency rooms since they really don't have an option of picking up a phone and calling their doctor to address the particular health concerns they have. And urgent cares and emergency rooms have a vital role to fill to kind of plug the gap with regards to health care for many, many people. Because we still don't have enough primary care physicians to be able to meet all the need that our population has. So in my experience in urgent care and my experience in emergency rooms, most, and I'm going to throw out a fairly arbitrary number that probably 80% of what I see in urgent care or 80% of what I see in the emergency room is medical care that can vary adeptly be treated by a primary care provider.
Mm-hmm.
But because that option is not there, because the access to that primary care provider isn't as easy, people will wander into urgent care. They will wander into emergency rooms, especially if a problem has progressed to the point where it has become urgent or it has become emergent.
We're seeing these the evolution and popping up around here in Reading of the concierge medical service. And I've got some experience with this. We have been privileged enough to be working with Prestige Medical Group, and we're going to have them on the show at some point here down the road. In fact, Dr. Rob Hamilton, who was on the show previous, is going to be responsible for their age management program. It's just fascinating new medicine there that we talked about. But what fascinates me about the concierge medical services is it really mimics a lot of what health clubs do. And it's a membership-based business model. And what I know I have gravitated towards, and a lot of patients clearly have, because these businesses are springing up all over the place, is that, you know, you pay a monthly fee. You get to see your doctor or a doctor, but certainly because they have a smaller cadre of doctors in the office, you get to see primarily your doctor. You know, any time of day, with or without appointment, waiting times are less. Certainly there are no additional costs other than labs or other kind of prescription medicines. If it is something serious, they will send you to the ER. But it fascinates me from a business person's perspective to see how, you know, the decline in primary care physicians and opportunities have, you know, resulted in this new model. And it just seems to me that some of the concerns and the problems that are being faced by primary care physicians have been addressed by this concierge model, and to some degree urgent care. But certainly with this concierge model, it kind of likens back to the 1950s, where you could call up and go see your doctor anytime. I mean, short of them coming to your house, mm-hmm. you can go. Wait times are minimal. Costs are minimal. They don't take insurance, so you don't have the 40% of your administrative costs going to the insurance companies. So I don't know if you've had any experience there or have an opinion about these concierge services.
And concierge services, to me, are kind of a newer concept. You know, of course, I was trained and educated in more of a realm where it was the traditional family practice model, a doctor having 2,000 or 3,000 or sometimes more patients as part of their panel. And, of course, most of that panel being driven by insurance companies or Medicare or Medi-Cal here in California, that those would be their patients for which they were primarily responsible to deliver that care. And several of my physician colleagues have gone away from that model, and I'll include myself in that as well, realizing that it was going to be better in terms of my personal lifestyle to go away from my family practice office that I sold in 2007 so that I could have more time with my family. And also have more opportunity to treat more patients. What a physician ultimately, one of the reasons why a doctor wants to become a primary physician is to have a good relationship with their patients mm-hmm. and to get to know them so that, A, they can be a good person with them, and, B, so that by knowing that patient better can deliver better care.
Well, we have always run out of time. There's so much more to talk about. Dr. Austin, thank you so much for spending this Saturday with us. Fascinating stuff. Maybe we'll have to pick this up down the road. Thank you all for listening to another edition of Wellgate Wellness. My name is Rich Novelli, and we hope you enjoy your Saturday. We'll talk to you soon.
Don't miss it. The Reading Gun Show, this weekend only. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Holiday Inn Convention Center, 1900 Hilltop Drive. This is the gun show of the year, jam-packed with handguns, shotguns, rifles, ammo, and, of course, reloading supplies. This weekend only, the Reading Gun Show at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. Don't miss it. The Reading Gun Show this weekend only. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Holiday Inn Convention Center, 1900 Hilltop Drive. This is the gun show of the year, jam-packed with handguns, shotguns, rifles, ammo, and, of course, reloading supplies. This weekend only, the Reading Gun Show at the Holiday Inn Convention Center.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, community radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
Your news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Val Dior. Forecasters say that much of the country is in store for heavy rain, snow, high wind, even a flood threat over the next several days. Part of a powerful storm system that's currently dropping rain on California. They're expected to get at least a few inches of rain over the weekend. Conditions especially ripe for tornadoes in the southeast and Great Plains through the middle of the week. Dr. Ben Carson made it official last night in a speech at CPAC that he is officially out of the race for president.
I'm hopeful that maybe some people, now that I am leaving the campaign trail, I know there's...
Donald Trump attending a Kansas campaign rally over the CPAC gathering today as voters in Maine, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Nebraska get to play their role today in the presidential nominating process.